You're listening to A Stranger Podcast, www.thestranger.com.
Hi, this is Jen Graves, and you're listening to Invisible, the Stranger's weekly conversation with people in art. I'm at James Harris Gallery with Margot Kwan Knight.
Hi, Jen.
Hi. We are standing in a room with five of your new works, but before we talk about those, I want to talk about how you got here, and I noticed that for some reason you're standing with a composition notebook and a book about essays on photography. Book of essays on photography. you have been working with photographs for a long time, right? But this show is the first show that is dealing with reflective surfaces.
Yes.
Is that right?
So basically what happened is I was always really focused on making these kind of hypothetical situations inside the photograph, you know, setting things up, making props, finding friends to model, photographing it, doing Photoshop if I needed to, and making these really fantastical, unreal situations that maybe had some kind of relationship with what is real or what is true but isn't real. And then with this work, I'm sort of shifting my focus from inside the rectangle to sort of outside the rectangle.
When did you shift? What was there a transition piece?
There was a big transition.
What did it have to do with the video of your mom?
That was the start. So that was the start. And
Can you talk about that piece?
Yeah.
What was that?
So the video piece of my mom is a 2-minute video. It's over 900 photographs. Because I was basically, the photographic series that I was doing before that was looking at time and how we feel distortions in time, where a moment seems to last forever or a whole day goes by and it felt like 5 minutes. I mean, everybody's had that. And so the next, I was like, I can't do time without time. And so then I tried, okay, if I can get more than one photograph together, can that make time? Which is, you know, the very beginning of film was all these photographs all in a row. And so that piece of my mom is 900 scans of family album photos of her starting when she's a baby and going all the way to when she's 60 years old. So it's almost like an animation of her face and she appears to age.
And she appears in about the same place in every frame.
Right. It was a lot of alignment to make sure her face sort of, as she turns, you know, I take a decade and say, okay, all the ones where she's facing to the right, I'll put those in a row so it looks like her head's moving.
How did you handle the end?
Well, the end is actual real-time video because I was feeling, I guess all this was feeling this disillusionment with the fantasy that I had believed in for so long that photographs could really make this window to another world. And then looking at, okay, if my mom keels over tomorrow, here's what I've got of her. And it's such a pathetic fragment that doesn't even begin to encompass who she is or her, you know, professional life. It's sort of the 2 minutes out of 60 years when she happened to be smiling in front of a mechanical box. So the ending, I had her just, it's video, it's just a few seconds of video, and she's in the same position as a snapshot, and she just stops smiling.
It fades.
Yeah, and that's the end of it.
It's a nice ending, sort of sorry ending.
Well, sad. It just, and it wasn't, well, I guess a lot of this also came out of a number of other things that were happening in my life. I think about other artists and look at their kind of creative paths and how do they get from one focus in their work to another. And I've done a lot of reading about creativity and sort of looked at people, someone like Matisse who's, you know, doing things onto his deathbed. He's writing on the ceiling with charcoal. And it's like, okay, how does that transition happen? And one of the things that I found in the reading was that people who had a very long, rich, creative life put themselves into situations where things were tough, whether it was Picasso constantly having very turbulent relationships with women. You know, that wasn't necessarily a positive thing, what he was doing with them, but it kind of kept
charged him
up in a way. And then this is in a book by Howard Gruber, who's the guy at Harvard who's written a book about all these different creative people, kind of case studies on their lives. And so for me, the bumps in the road were within a 2-month period, starting my MFA, which is designed to make this happen, right? getting hit by a car, getting married, moving, my husband starting school and quitting work. And so a lot of things happen in one period that made me think about, especially the car. The car was the biggest thing. Just thinking about, okay, if this is it, what's left after,
yeah, you know, what happened?
Well, I don't have a car, so I bike everywhere. And I was biking. At the time we were downtown, I biked to my studio, which is basically a room in my parents' house in Bellevue. And the guy just, you know, turned left into me. And so I wasn't physically horribly hurt, nothing that, you know, didn't heal in a few weeks. But mentally, it was really hard to think about just realizing, you know, it can happen every day.
In a brush.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just, and everybody, it's the most trite thing in the world. Like, I mean, Dawn Cerny's the title of her recent show at the Henry, we're all going to die except for you. Mm-hmm. And it's different when you suddenly think about it for yourself. And
mm-hmm. Completely. So when you transitioned, what came first in this work?
In this work, the beginning was these mirror portraits.
The two of you?
Yeah, the two of me were the beginning. So we're walking over towards that now. And basically what these are is I took a mirror tile, like what you get from the hardware store, mm-hmm. and I took photographs of myself, one straight on, and then one with the camera next to me as I looked into a mirror, so it's just slightly at an angle. And then I had a guy with a laser etch off the reflective coating from the back of the mirror. So now that part's just clear glass, and then I painted that black. So what you end up with is this mirror where it's only reflective inside my face. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. When I stand, like I'm standing right in front of the straight one now, and I can line myself up and see my current self in this image of my old self, and you standing to my right can see my face hopefully perfectly lined up in this angled image of my face.
And you can see me.
Yeah, I see
because
you.
I appear in the angled version for you.
Yeah.
But I can't see you. I only can see you. Well, it's very hard to explain.
It's
but I only can see it is actually but it's important because when I first saw these pieces, I was really perplexed about what to do with the fact that you weren't facing exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that it had something to do with me looking, but it was really hard for me to figure out what it was. So there is actually a way in which you can line up a group of people. Carrie Scott was telling me about this, the gallery director here. She was saying that you have an interest, kind of like a sort of quixotic interest in making a whole series of these where you can line up a whole group of people and they will, because of the way they stand, will reflect mm-hmm. in the mirrors, but the first person in the line will be the only one who can see everybody,
right.
and the last person will be able to see nobody.
Right.
Will be able to see other people, but not themselves.
And that's a piece I'm working on now.
Oh, you are actually working on it?
Yeah, it's. Mm-hmm. I've got the photos together. I haven't done the layout yet, but it's photographs of my dad. And so I wanted, with this piece, the idea is I see myself, and there's like a change in time, this idea of bringing real time into the photograph. And that's why I have my book here, because I wanted to read you this awesome quote from 1951 from, I don't know if you say Bernice or Berenice Abbott. And she's talking about, because this is how I got to these works, is from these readings and thinking, pretend I don't know everything about how photography's ended up, but let me take the directives that these early discoverers mm-hmm. and early users are putting out there, and if I follow those to a conclusion that isn't necessarily the normal one, you know, what comes out, and it mm-hmm. was these works. But she says, like every other means of expression, photography, if it is to be utterly honest and direct, should be related to the life of the times, the pulse of today. The photograph may be presented as finely and artistically as you will, but to merit serious consideration must be directly connected with the world we live in. Mm. And so that was where I got a lot of these mirrors. You know, how can you take an image from the past and make it current still mm. and have it relate more to what's happening now and tomorrow and the next day?
And the idea of time, you know, that photography is related to time, not just kind of an imagined space. You think of Erwin Mohr's one-minute sculptures.
Yeah,
you know,
those are so
which
much
are
fun.
A lot, in a lot of ways, made for the camera.
Right.
You know, but they have a direct relationship with time. So, when you come into this gallery, one thing that's hard to kind of understand from this perspective, just like 2 weeks after the show opened, is that you still look exactly like these photographs.
Right,
but you
right.
won't always look like these photographs.
I know, I need to get old in a hurry. Yeah.
But one other thing I wanted to ask you is, so if someone buys this work, do they get the photograph of you or a photograph of themselves?
If they really wanted to, you know, steal my soul, I suppose they would take this. But if they were more in line with the concept of the work, I would do a photograph of them. And so each piece is unique. Mm-hmm. And they would have, you know, because it's completed by that person looking into their own portrait. And, you know, they are adding to the work every day, adding wrinkles, adding zits, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, as they age through time.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's essentially a portrait commission.
Right, right.
In addition to kind of being a conceptual work that you experience in the gallery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really wanted it to draw the lines between who's looking and who's being looked at. And so the reflections, you know, with the nature of angles, they draw those out. So the one I was talking about before with my dad, it'll be the one image is straight on where he would be looking at himself, and then the images moving out to one side are progressively more angled.
Mm-hmm.
So then you would have that effect where an onlooker walking away from him would see his face in these progressively angled slots.
An onlooker would see...
Like you see me in this angle. If you moved further over, you'd see my face even more angled.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bit tricky to talk about.
It is hard to talk about.
You just have to see it. So I've got to hurry up and make it.
What about Pistoletto? This is the largest work in the show, and it seems to me to be the most opposite of the spectrum from that piece, or maybe from that work. This one is playing with the idea of a fantasy image,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and also that fantasy you were talking about, that the image itself is a link to another world,
right,
kind of,
right.
that really is true or real in some kind of important way. Where did this come from?
I guess when I began working on those, the mirror portraits we just looked at, one of my faculty at school luckily said, hey, you're treading onto territory that's, you know, got some history to it. Go look at this artist. And so, you know, I took my sweet time following his advice and had come up with this idea of printing on acrylic, which I was completely convinced was going to be the next best thing, because this printer had only been around for not even a decade, and I was going to be so new. And then I realized, you know, doing my homework, that here's Pistoletto doing this in the 60s with silk screens onto polished steel. And so I realized, you know, he got there way before me, and I've got to take what was a great idea on his part, which I'm completely interested in, follows in my own developing path, and see if I can kind of commandeer his idea into something new. So this comes from his pieces, which are vertical. They rest on the floor, and they're basically like a huge mirror, even though it's steel, and there's usually a figure in there. So here I took the figure out because I wanted, you know, each viewer to provide their own action character. And then the piece is horizontally oriented, so it's more like a movie where you enter into this and make your own action happen in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then the imagery is a bed with a gun on it, and I had a lot of trouble trying to figure out what was going to be the image. I wanted it to have something to do with asking the viewer to make some kind of action and then not allowing the action to happen, because I felt like every photograph we see in the world is asking us for something. Mm-hmm. You know, buy this product, look this way, send money to this, you know, campaign or these starving children in Africa, whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever the image is, it's always asking for something, and yet I know I turn the page, you know, every day and don't actually follow through on many of those things. So this is actually also a play on words, because in Italian, pistola is gun, pistol, and letto is bed. So it was sort of an homage all wrapped up.
And also Pistoletto, you are sort of a, you know, following in the footsteps of Pistoletto, and the sort of, and doesn't etto mean small?
An etto is like a, it's a certain measurement of weight.
Mm-hmm.
So like a kilogram is a certain, I can't remember if it's really a tenth, but if you go to the market and buy, you know, nuts or something, you can
right.
ask for so many ettos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think of that one. But I'm sure, you know, a creative...
We could make something out of it.
Somebody with some boggle skills could really find their way around here.
What about that piece over there? What is the title of that
piece? Okay, this piece is called Reflection, and let me explain it. It's a little bit complicated. So it's a light box, like Pistoletto is, and like Pistoletto, there are lights in the back, then there's a photograph, and then on the front, there's a two-way mirror, which is where you see yourself. But with this one, the lights are not on all the time. They're fluctuating very slowly over a two-minute cycle to come on and off. So when the lights are on, they illuminate this photo, which is actually a photograph of the room, of the reflection of the room, taken in this exact mirror. So you see this photograph, and when the lights go down, the two-way mirror acts like a mirror, and then you see the actual reflection of the room. So it's just this sort of alternation between seeing a reflection and seeing a photograph of the same image. And you, of course, fading in and out since you're not in the photograph.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the strangest thing to be looking at an image of the place you're at without you in it. Even though you're reflecting in it, you have the awareness that it's a reflection. You're not in the photograph. You know, because as the lights come up, you reflect less.
Right.
Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Am I crazy?
No,
yeah.
You're right.
And
you're right.
And then you'd spend a lot of time trying to line yourself up in exactly the place
where you think you were standing
when you were shooting.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's so funny because you spend so much time literally trying to be in the position of the artist. Mm-hmm. You know, in this show, it's a really interesting kind of reenactment of the making of the work that takes place when you come in here. Mm-hmm. It's not just that you come in here and you experience it as sort of a part of the work in that you're implied through the reflections. It's also that your vision is trying to line up with your vision.
Right. It's really, you kind of have to become a camera by closing one eye in a lot of these pieces to line yourself up in the exact place. And I was thinking about, you know, photography takes a certain moment out of continuous time. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's taking one perspective out of continuous space, and so this piece is really making that analogy explicit for both time and space. Mm-hmm. And then I liked how you're talking about this sort of, the whole process is then condensed into where you are putting your eye. There's this great article that I was actually reading when I was thinking about these works by Craig Owens, and it's called On a Beam. Mm-hmm. And so he's talking about how inside a photograph, you know, there are means to represent the whole process, the structure of the larger structure of the photograph, through analogies to, say, a window or a mirror. Mm-hmm. So he was looking at a Brassai photograph where Brassai had taken a picture of a couple, and behind them there's a mirror, and then next to them there's a couple sitting the same way, and so everything's like reflecting and duplicating, and then the photograph itself is reflecting that situation. And so I really liked this idea of doubling things up over and over.
Who are some of your favorite artists? What are some of your favorite works, I guess would be better to ask?
In relation to these works, one of the things that was really inspiring, I'm going to look up the name of the choreographer. My mom took me to the ballet at the and it was so fabulous. There was this piece called Caught.
Pacific Northwest Ballet?
Yes, and it's called Caught, and the choreographer was David Parsons. And it was this incredible thing where the dancer, it was modern, you know, the dancer had a light trigger in his hand, and as he would, and the stage was dark, and as he would jump, he would pull the trigger. So you would get like this strobe and see him in the air burned into your retina, and then it would be dark, and he would run along and do it again. And so it looked as if he was sort of striding across the space in midair, and it was just this incredible, kind of beautiful.
Was that recent?
It was, I'm not sure exactly. It was a few times ago. I don't go very frequently, so
yeah.
it really stuck in my mind, and especially just trying to think about what is a photograph, you know, if it's not a traditional photograph, what is that? Were those photographs that were burned into our eyes and they just didn't stay around very long? I really liked that. And then some of the other things I was looking at were, there was a great interactive video pieces by, I think his name is Rafael, the last name is Lozano Hemmer, and that was at the Mexican Pavilion of the Venice Biennale, and there were a lot of interactive pieces where your presence would stimulate a video image to respond to you in some way.
I heard about this and missed this pavilion, so
please describe it. So one of the pieces he had was a bunch of projections onto the floor, and when you stepped on top of them, you would see that this sleeping person would roll over and look up at you and, you know, kind of be like, you're standing on me. Mm-hmm. And then as you stepped away, they would lay back down. So it had a lot to do with surveillance technology. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting because I started thinking about that and kind of the Greeks thought, oh, inspiration is this chain of rings that come, you know, the first ring is God's got it in his hand and then it comes down. And so this Lozano Hemmer piece was like the latest ring in the chain, you know, made in 2005, whereas in 1995, there was a really cool piece by an Italian artist group called Studio Azzurro, and they had done a really similar thing with a whole bunch of sleeping bodies projected on the floor.
Some of that work was at Bellevue Arts Museum last year.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They are great. I actually went and visited their studio when I was over to check out the Biennale and some other things this summer, and it was really amazing to see that much equipment in one place, but they do some really interesting things and have been doing it for so long.
So are you a technology nerd?
No, I don't, you know, even have a digital camera. I mean, I'm still shooting on film and I've...
Deliberately? Is that an important decision for you?
Well, it's just too expensive to buy a digital camera. Yeah. Right. You know, to print at, you know, say this size, even on film, for Pistoletto, it's 8 feet long to get that kind of resolution. If I shoot medium format and then scan, I get more, and it's like $14 compared with buying a camera that would, you know, be so expensive.
Yeah. But what's next for you?
Well, I'm working on these are all sort of photo-based works, but at the same time in the same investigation, I'm doing video projects also, which again are pieces where the viewer has a big role to play. So I've got a scholarship from 911 that started in October, and I took a bit of a break from that to produce this show, and so I'm excited to go back there and do some more work there with them.
Do you have a show coming up there for that work?
No, nothing's scheduled yet, but it's just really wonderful to be able to use the equipment, because like I said, I don't have that kind of stuff myself, so it's a fantastic resource. And you know, they've always got inspirational people coming through, but I'm working on video projects that sort of mine the other half of this this question about time and space and the viewer needing to be there to see it.
When is your MFA at Bard? When will you be finished?
I'll be finished, you know, if everything goes well. Okay. I'm crossing my fingers. In August, I'll be done.
Okay. Yeah. And you started in...
I started not last summer, but the summer before that.
So that was the time of the break.
Yeah, that was the time. Uh-huh. And, you know, MFA programs are amazing because they're designed to do this, to just rip you apart. Now you don't believe in anything that you've done in the past. It's all, you know, crap. And so now you've got to rebuild yourself from, you know, little ripped up fibers that you can sort of pull yourself back together. But it's a great, great experience.
Is there anything else you want to talk about? I mean, this show, we haven't covered every single work, but actually, let's end on the old woman.
Okay, well, before we leave this piece, I just want to thank the Medium 2007 Fund helped support this piece, Reflection, as well as Randy Moss, who's an interactive designer, and I really would never have figured out all these LEDs and programming things if it hadn't been for his generosity, so
shout
I
want
to make a shout out to them, yes.
So the piece we're going to see across the room from Reflection is called what?
Silver. So this is a piece, a 24 by 30 inch piece of brass, which has then been silver plated, just kind of like grandma's heirloom candlesticks. Same, they do that stuff at the same factory. And then, so it's polished to a mirror finish, so it's very reflective. And then to get the image onto it, I silk screened. I had a silk screen made with the image of an old woman who's actually my husband's grandmother.
How old is she?
She's 91, Alice. And then instead of silk screening ink onto the metal, I silk screened liver of sulfur, which is just basically stinky sulfur. And that encouraged the silver to tarnish. So then when that's all rinsed off, all that is left on the surface is literally just the silver itself and the tarnish on the silver. So if you came up to this piece and, you know, took the protective plexi off and went on there with some silver polishing cream, it would just be gone in a second.
Mm. She's tarnished onto the image.
So she's tarnished onto the plate. Yes, so and then the so she's sort of a dark, you know, kind of weird brownish, bluish, purplish color, which eventually will turn black, and then the lighter silver-colored part around her is already started to tarnish a little bit. It's slightly browned, and that will also eventually tarnish and go black. So, you know, over many years, she's like a photograph that hasn't been fixed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been developed, and the image is there, but nothing is stopping it from continuing to develop with exposure to, you know, light and sun and heat and air. So she'll eventually disappear.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.